At 67, Martha Woodruff has published her first novel, which is winning rave reviews from critics. Small Blessings is the story of some real characters living and working at a school about the size and location of Sweetbriar College, where Woodruff once worked. I asked her to tell us when her writing career began.
When I was about 10 years old, I got a personal rejection letter from the poetry editor at the Atlantic Monthly for a poem I sent in about mourning. So I count that as the beginning of my serious literary career. But mainly, I have written, I would say, personal essays are the most successful of my literary endeavors.
Where on earth did you get the idea that you could publish a poem in Atlantic? At 10 years old, nobody even knows about the Atlantic.
I grew up in a very academic, intellectual family. And, you know, by 10, I knew there was poetry in the Atlantic Monthly.
So where did you go with that rejection? I mean, did it set
you
back?
Well, not anywhere. I wrote a lot more really bad poetry and then realized I was not a poet. My own navel is not interesting, which is all I seem to be able to write poetry about, and I gave it up.
And then you moved on to?
Oh, I had the most accidental, non-sequential career imaginable. I was an old hippie. I am an old hippie, and I sort of blew all over the professional landscape wherever the wind took me. It included restaurants, it included theater, it included television, it included working as an extremely low-level administrator at a college. It's included lots of public radio, hooray. And now, it seems at the age of 67, I am a novelist.
So how long was this book in the making? Had you been thinking about it a long time?
I've been writing novels since my mid-40s, and I remember vividly when the first novel started, I was driving in my Blue Ranger pickup truck with a camper top doing a freelancing story, and I would just sort of drive around on blue highways with my head hanging out. This line came into my head, which was, Annie Mayfield did not remember taking the pills. I just pulled over, wrote that down, and that was the beginning of my first novel. I'm doing air quotes here, which I rarely do. And I actually got an agent for it, and it went around, but it never sold. But I continued to write fiction in the morning because you know what life is like. You know, once you get out of bed, it's sort of like living on the inside of a pinball machine. You're just going, trying to dodge the next calamity. So I got in the habit of taking 2 or 3 hours in the morning and just inhabiting these wonderful imaginary worlds, hanging out with these imaginary people and see what happened to them. Small Blessings was actually completed maybe 3 years ago. And, you know, it went into a cardboard box in my home office. And flash forward, I am working on a pretty intense nonfiction writing project. And I needed a mental break from thinking deep thoughts, and I hauled out Small Blessings, and I thought, these people deserve a better life than a box in my closet. And a really substantial revision later, a new agent, and it was being auctioned. And the auction went on for 2 days. It's probably the most surreal 2 days of my life. And then St. Martin's bought it. It was one of the greatest yee-haws of my entire existence. I am perfectly willing to welcome serendipity into my life.
But this
you know,
was this
bring
was,
it on.
Yeah, this was beyond that, though. I mean, you had gotten some discouraging feedback initially on the novel.
Yes. My then agent just didn't like it. You know, fiction is so subjective. People have decided tastes. They like this or they don't. And for an agent to represent a novel, he or she has to be in love with it. And my first agent, whom I loved, and thankfully we're still friends, but she didn't like my fiction.
So the second agent, what sort of reaction did you get from her?
Oh, it was really fast. And it was yes. And it's been a wonderful partnership. You know, we kind of seem to share a sense of humor and approach to things, and we both work very hard, but we, I think, don't take ourselves too seriously.
Now, are they awaiting the next book?
Yeah.
Of course. And is the next book in process?
The next book is through draft 1.5. And the main characters in Small Blessings are not in the second book, but I envision doing at least three novels that have interrelated characters.
So now this first published novel, Small Yes. Blessings, is set at a small college, and I don't remember if you actually specifically name Amherst.
No, I worked at Sweetbriar College and had a wonderful time there. Many, many pleasant memories. It was a great professional adventure, what I did there. But the college itself has changed from that. What's not changed is the bookstore, which is just a flat-out tribute to the bookstore where I had my first job at Sweetbriar, at the Sweetbriar College Bookshop, run by Skipper Fitz. And it was this magical place where this, you know what college campuses are like. They're so political, and there's such a hierarchical, you know, pecking order. But this college bookstore was a place where everybody came and just hung out. It was a community building, the sort of heartbeat of the college community. I found it. It amazed me. And my job was Rose's job, my first job there, which was to run the espresso machine and do event programming.
Rose is your main character in Small Blessings.
Right.
And she's tall, thin, a free spirit, very comfortable with herself, easy with people. I couldn't help wondering, is Rose you?
No, I don't think so. And then I knew you were going to ask that, and I knew I was going to have to defend it. I audited a class with the late George Garrett, who was a much beloved head of the MFA program at UVA for a long time. And he talked about how not to get in an autobiographical trap. And he said, the first thing you do is change the hair. And I have baby fine, wispy hair, and Rose has kind of a long Brillo pad hair. You know, her hair is always getting in her way, or she's messing with it. So that's the first thing. The other thing is Rose has, I think, probably never in her adult life been truly emotionally close to anybody. She likes everybody, and everybody likes her, and they feel safe with her. But she has never sort of sat in one place and said, this is my spot, and this is my family. Whereas I have always been kind of a nester and, you know, had children at an early age, and I've always kind of had a home and identified with it. So I think that's a big difference.
Are you concerned that people at Sweetbriar are going to be dialing you up once they've read the book to insist that they're in there?
You know, I kind of like it because I made such wonderful friends there. It'd be good to hear from them. Call me up.
And you'll insist loudly that they are not
that they are not in there.
So tell me about your mindset over the years with regard to writing. There are many, many people who would have been discouraged enough at age 10 to stop. And of course, the first novel didn't go anywhere, but you just kept on. What did you tell yourself? How were you able to persist?
Well, I can remember my parents worrying about me because things came too easily for me. And I don't mean that I'm a giant brain. I just mean to see, be able to land myself in situations before I knew what I was doing. And I learned a huge lesson from Jay Kernis, who used to be, I don't know, head of programming or news, or he was a big whoop-de-doo at NPR back in the 80s. And I met somebody at a party who said, I was just getting into radio. They said, "Come, you ought to come work with NPR. So I said, okay. And I called up Jay and kept talking to him until he, I'm good at getting time with people, until he agreed to see me. So I motored up there with this really awful, essentially unproduced tape with the late blues singer John Jackson. And Jay, bless his heart, Kernis, listened to it all the way through. And then he said to me, you are a great interviewer, but you don't know anything about radio or technical things. Go away and learn it and then come back. So I think that really influenced my take on rejection. You know, rejection is specific. This one person doesn't like this particular thing at this moment in time. And as the Doobie Brothers say, you always have a chance to give up, so why do it now?
You know, the book is full of great little quotes and sayings. Have you been saving those over
no.
the years? It's
no.
just you, huh?
I just literally sit in the – it's like watching a movie almost when I write. It's fun. I sit there at my computer and I say, okay, with small blessings, what's Tom up to at this moment? Or how's Henry, you know, doing with his soccer game and things like that? And it is essentially just watching a movie.
Yeah, and it's quite a movie. I mean, it really starts happening very early. There's not a lot of time before the plot twists begin.
Just like life, don't you think?
Well, yeah, it's certainly unpredictable, you know, when people die or show up at your door or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow with a book, you don't expect the plot to evolve that quickly.
Well, I have had a rackety, jumbled life, and I have sort of courted both disaster and success, kind of in equal measures. So probably that is my mindset or my view of life is actually how it kind of works. I don't play safe very often.
Now, what about these characters of yours? They are wonderful characters.
Thank you.
And not all characters, I suppose, are based on people we've known. But, for example, is your mother in here at all? Did you take parts of these older women who are so strong from your mom or somebody else that you knew?
You know, I like what age has done to me. It's calmed me down. It's focused me. It's given me perspective. And it has made me accept that I, like everybody else, have strengths and weaknesses. That there are things that challenged me when I was younger. The challenge is still there. I just deal with it better. And I think as I got older and more forgiving, you know, you get the older you get perspective on the people who were old when you were young. I can see that same sort of, dare I say, maturing. But relax, it's more of a relaxation, you know. It's
mellowing is the word that comes to
yes,
mind.
Yes, mellowing. It's, hey, this is how I am, and this is how the real world is, and let's have as nice a day as we can. And those are the qualities that I think I wanted Rose's mother particularly to have. Agnes, I love, because she just takes no nonsense from anybody.
Which is a good quality.
Which is a very good quality.
Yeah.
You know,
not everybody's brave enough.
But she doesn't demand that you agree with her. She's just going to say what she thinks. Throw that into the pot. One thing I love about the boomer babes, as boomer babes, is that I don't think we see retirement. I think we see reinvention. And, you know, at some point, the body and mind will fail me. But I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just going to keep at it.
People listening to this will certainly know you from WMRA, where you've been
forever.
Yeah.
By my standards.
Yeah, and just one of the key voices, key personalities that make the station what it is. But were you with NPR before that? Or
no. I freelanced after Jay Kernis told me to go away and learn something. I went away and learned something and then freelanced back in the 80s doing feature pieces and having just an absolute blast, still in my pickup truck, still driving all over the country and sleeping in the back. Then in the 90s, I had my crash and burn years and reinvented myself as a sober person and got back on a career track, which first was working at Sweetbriar, and then at WMRA, and they have been unbelievable to me. They've let me regularly reinvent myself, you know, in terms of what I do for the station. They've encouraged me and let me freelance regularly. It's a direct report to the arts unit, and my beat, so to speak, was books and publishing. All told, I probably have, you know, 15 years of public radio. And a really educational thing that I did in terms of writing was when I couldn't pay the rent with freelancing, I did radio image ads for things like the East Coast Dairy Queens or high-end shops. And it was the first time I learned how to write with real discipline because, you know, a commercial 30 seconds does not mean 32 seconds. And that's where I learned to cut syllables and say things directly. And it's tremendous good practice or skill building for writing.
Yeah, those jobs do shape you, make you more flexible in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So NPR.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there's a place for you there? Are you headed toward Washington one of these
days? No. I love to go to Washington, and I love to still work. I mostly work for NPR.org now, particularly for Monkey See, their popular culture blog. It's a huge place, and I tend to not do well with, are you listening, WMRA, with bosses? I am essentially unbossable. I also am not particularly good with facts. I don't think I do well doing what you do, Sandy, doing news. I sort of do what I do. And I also want to live in my cow pasture. So my ambition my entire life, or since my really thought about having an ambition, has been to live in a cow pasture, live small market, and work big market when I wanted to.
And here we go.
And here we go.
So you've been traveling the country now promoting the book?
No. I went out to Seattle, and I am going to Tennessee, North Carolina, down to Georgia, sort of the South. This has been a real demonstration of the reach of the internet, because what St. Martin's really has me doing is responding to questions from book bloggers and book websites. And, for example, I was the Hooray, the August, the debut author in the Goodreads newsletter, which garners, let's face it, much more attention than traveling anywhere. So it's me and my computer reaching out to the readers.
So you must be living at the computer now. I mean, I imagine there's a lot of work to be done.
There is.
Promoting the book.
There is, and I get up and do a few yoga poses and, you know, get up on the elliptical for a while and then go back. But I love that, who was it? Lydia Netzer, who did a blog for me and we share an editor. And she said, a novel is a conversation with a reader. And I'm not a reclusive person. I love meeting people and getting out and mainly getting other people to talk about themselves. This is really strange talking about myself, but I love the idea that I am accessible. You know, I have a website and people send me notes and tell me what they think about Small Blessings, people who've gotten advanced reading copies. And I love that. Occasionally when you're sitting in a radio production room, you go, is anybody out there? And it's so nice when you get a note from somebody saying, I loved that story.
Right. And you have not left radio yet. You're keeping
there. I still do a weekly feature, The Spark. It used to be an hour show. It's now a weekly feature. The theory behind The Spark is anybody who really is passionate about doing something makes an interesting conversation. And I've never had that disproved. I can meet somebody pumping gas, or somebody can tell me about something, and I get them in, and we have a conversation about what they love doing. Everything from, you know, growing tomatoes to writing a biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I love that. It's professional permission to be nosy, to be curious. Let's be kinder and gentler than nosy.
Yeah, it is a ticket. It's an access.
Yeah.
It's a great job that way.
Yes.
Do you see a film coming out of Small Blessings?
That would be a gas. The whole thing to me feels as though I'm a surfer and the wave of the century has come along. And I am up on my surfboard, hanging tan, riding that wave. And wherever it goes, I go with it. It's so exhilarating, Sandy. You can't imagine what fun it is, you know, just to see. Look around and see all this stuff happening and think, it's because I wrote a novel.
And the fun has just begun. Do you have any advice for other folks who have a book in a box or have always dreamed of writing a book and just never got to it?
I think the essence of good writing of any sort is hard, specific thinking. You know, figuring out exactly what you're trying to say and then saying exactly that. And that's a discipline that took me a long time to understand. You know, some of my favorite passages never make it into finished products of any kind. You know, you know what it's like. You go out in an interview and you get the most gorgeous piece of tape that somebody saying this something and you think, that's my story. And of course, it's the piece of tape that eventually ends up getting in the way of the story actually going. And it's, for me, it's the same thing with writing novels. So what I love is the hard thinking and discipline that goes into writing fiction. And I think you can't, well, everybody's different. I hate to say, I think I can't avoid that hard thinking.
Right. So from your perspective, maybe hang in, but prepare to do some hard work.
Yeah. And get your ego out of the way. You know, the ego is just really a big mountain we all have to get over.
Yes, for sure. Lots of possible rejection before you finally get that call. What did you do after you got the call? I'm assuming it was a call and not an email that they said accepted.
Well, I was at brunch with two women friends while the second day of the auction at St. Martin's. And, you know, we're sitting there eating our eggs, and my agent calls and said, you know, okay, Small Blessings just sold for what to me is a whacking pile of money. And I hung up the phone and I just thought, life has another richer dimension. And this is a complete gas.
Did you tell them and did they order a
yes.
bottle of champagne?
No, not for me. I'm in recovery. But but we raised our iced tea and said, yee-haw.
That was public radio diva and newly published novelist Martha Woodruff. Her first work of fiction, Small Beginnings, was published this summer by St. Martin's Press. I'm Sandy Houseman.